Welcome back to Restoring Home, where we talk about marriage, parenting, and faith. And today we're going to talk about building your faith in yourself and in your spouse. And our guests are Grant and Robin Luton. And not everybody knows you guys, so most people listening do, but many don't. So just to quickly let everybody know, you are the congregational leader at Beth Tikkun Fellowship. Right. And anything else you want to say to us to introduce people to yourselves?
Well, this is my lovely bride who I'm always talking about and using for
embarrassing examples.
For embarrassing examples in the teachings.
That's right. The cross I bear.
Good. So we're glad you're here and thanks for taking some time. And we're going to talk about faith. It's one of the big pieces of family, of course, and marriage. And you guys have been married how long?
Almost 42 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think August. We might make it.
Yeah, yeah. Just keep at it. Yeah. You'll be okay. Yeah. That's right. Good. So we have a couple of questions we're going to run by you and hear some stories. Everybody loves stories. Mm-hmm. So I know you prepared some. We've asked you to think about a few.
Sure.
So the first question has to do with how you build your faith. And Grant, I'm going to let you go first. If you would, just take a few minutes to tell people what you have learned to do over your years to build your own personal faith.
I guess I continue to build it the same way it started. Mm-hmm. I was raised in a Christian home, but it was my parents' faith I just inherited as the faith of my family rather than my own personal faith until I was about 16 years old when out of pure boredom I picked up a Bible for the first time on my own just to read it. Mm-hmm. And when I did, it came alive. Mm-hmm. And then my faith in God just became stronger and stronger. I still didn't know him and wouldn't get to know him for another 2 or 3 years. But that's another story. But my faith has continued to be built by immersing myself in his word, mm-hmm. because that is like the place we go where God always shows up. Mm-hmm. And through that, I think, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and Rob and I have been talking about it, is that gratitude mm-hmm. is what mm-hmm. continues to keep my faith strong. Mm-hmm. I just listened to a TED talk a couple of days ago. It was not a Christian man that I'm aware of, but he was talking about gratitude and fear can't dwell together. Mm. Fear is the opposite of faith. Mm. And if we have gratitude and we're constantly looking for things to be grateful for, mm-hmm. They're all around us. What's there to be afraid of? And so the more gratitude I express to God for all the things he does daily, my faith is just strong. I see him everywhere when I do that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm asking a real really give me some detail here.
Sure.
I agree, you know, reading the word is strengthens us. Yeah. Tell folks kind of what you would recommend to do for, at least for starters, on how does it really work out? Is it like 10 minutes in the morning, you read it through a book at a time or a chapter at a time? Give some practical, here's what I would do to start, or here's how I would do to grow.
Well, some people like reading the Bible through on a yearly basis. I did that once. It's too fast for me. I compare that's like water skiing compared to deep sea diving. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go down. The beauty is underneath. And you read it, but as important as it is to read it, it's important to take at least that much time and think about it, meditate on it.
Mm-hmm. It's like enjoying your food.
Exactly. You read my mind because mm-hmm. you put the food in your mouth. You don't just swallow it. There's a step in between. You chew it, you mm-hmm. break it down, mm-hmm. you just chew on it. Remember, it's only those animals that chew their cud that are kosher. Mm-hmm. And so we need to chew our cud. We just mm-hmm. need to meditate on what we read. Go slow mm-hmm. and then let it become a part of you.
And mm-hmm. taste and see that he is good.
Yes, mm-hmm. you taste and see mm-hmm. that he is good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, tasting right. comes before seeing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Robin, what about yourself?
I think as I thought about how I've built my personal faith in God, I would answer by saying, I realized I had to build and not tear down my personal thoughts mm-hmm. and belief system about him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The truth.
The truth, because at a certain point, it became very clear, and we'll get into this as we share some stories later, I didn't believe he was good. I mean, generally good, God is good, but I doubted his goodness. And I doubted his sovereignty. And I doubted a little bit enough to leave space for fear in my life and the misunderstanding that I had to control a whole lot of it because I couldn't possibly leave it up to him to love me enough to really take care of all the fine details in my family, in my marriage, in my life. I doubted his goodness. And when I chose to believe him, that he is who he says he is, everything started to change. And it is a choice. It wasn't something that somebody could sit down and outline for me. It was the self-talk. You know, the power of life and death is in the tongue. And we often think that what I say to other people is either going to build them up or tear them down, create life or death. Well, it does that in my own head. And for so long, I didn't even realize that my self-talk about his nature was he's good-ish. But there's a part of my life that I need to have an exit strategy and control when things go awry. And it became a huge obstacle to intimacy with him.
So you're saying, so you made the choice, you know, to come to the point where you made a choice to believe him.
I did, and just take him at his word. And it sounds like, well, it was a choice.
Robin, what else do you try to do to encourage Grant in his faith?
The best way I can encourage Grant in his faith is a very similar answer. I trust him to be the good man I know he is. Because if I doubt his goodness and I doubt his faithfulness, just as I used to doubt God's goodness and faithfulness, it's an obstacle to real intimacy. It's the same answer. And so many of us ladies think that in order to protect ourselves, we can trust this man that we chose to marry, but we better hold back a little bit just in case they let us down. Well, they know that we're thinking that, because then our respect for them is held back. And if I don't expect much, if I don't expect much, he senses that I don't expect much, and he reads that as, well, she's disappointed in me. Well, how are you going to behave towards someone who's kind of disappointed in you?
Yeah, not when I see Robin trusting me to be a good man, I feel the pressure from God. You better be a good man. She's counting on you. And I really want to up my game because I don't want to disappoint her. But if I saw you as self-protective and kind of like reserving part of your affection, not trusting your heart to me, then it's like, well, she doesn't really trust me anyway. You know, a wise rabbi, Rabbi Menachem Schneerson, said that the secret to intimacy is vulnerability.
And
that has really meant a lot to us. And whether it's intimacy with God, with one another, in any form, there has to be vulnerability. And to be vulnerable, you have to be fearless. You really have to be fearless.
I think I would narrow down the answer to your question, Steve, about my relationship with God, and your question, Donna, my relationship with him, with a phrase. For both of these, I had to choose to be all in. All in. And suddenly the world opens up because I'm showing up. And then suddenly there's connection and there's trust, and then the relationship spirals up as God intends.
I really do want to hear a story of how, between the two of you, an example of how you live that out. But also I want to hear about the kids. So if you think of one in marriage, I know you have an idea of one for your kids, but if you think of one for marriage too, I'd love to hear that. An example.
Well, we have three kids. They're all grown now. They're all adults. They're all almost as old as we are now. And and each of them is
catching
a different
up.
Story. And, you know, I honestly, I think I learned a lot more from my three kids than they ever did for me. And God used them in mighty ways in my life. But the story we want to share is, I'm going to let you start it, because you're the one who was thinking about this first. Mm-hmm. And I was even sharing the same story a couple of nights earlier with someone on the phone from out of state. So why don't you go ahead and share what we were going through.
There was a period of time in our life, you know, in our 42 years, we've had a great marriage, but we have been through some really difficult stuff, not in our relationship, but just life. I mean, some really challenging things. I think everybody does, you know, it's just part of life. But one of the times that I was struggling, because I was in that doubt stage, but I didn't know it. I was so afraid that my boys were going to give in to peer pressure and the temptations of our culture. And what if this happens? And what if they believe that? And what if they start that? And what if they try that? And, you know, and I was just really nervous about what could happen if they did this or didn't do that. And that was just my mindset. And I remember so clearly, this really was a game changer for our family. Grant lovingly but firmly approached me and he said, Robin, he said, how do you expect our boys to believe and trust in a God that you don't really believe and trust in yourself? And at first I was like, well, I I really had to process that, and it wasn't an immediate thing. It took some time. And that was the beginning of my choice to begin to believe in him, because everything was on the line. And all I can say is that when I decided to really be all in and take him at his word that he's sovereign, he's good, he's got this. He entrusted our children's souls to us. He's going to equip us. He knows every detail of our life. And I could believe him. Our kids caught that. And suddenly they saw a mom who was filled with joy and peace. And enjoying them. Because I wasn't always expecting them to fail. When we expect people to fail, they fail. Suddenly, I was able to confidently know that they are good souls and they were going to step up and become good people, good adults, and they have.
Well, I remember something that took place right around that same period of time. I was in my office and I was studying. I don't know why, but I was in the particular passage, but it was the verse that says, be still and know that I am God. And I was looking at the Hebrew and I discovered that the Hebrew for that really means loosen your grip and know that I am God. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. And I know Robin loves Proverbs. And so she was in the dining room sitting there reading. And I went out and said, did you know that verse, be still, know that I am God, what it really means? And it means loosen your grip and know that I'm God. And your jaw literally dropped.
It did.
Because at that moment, you were reading about the story of Jochebed, putting baby Moses in that basket, putting the basket in the in the river, and she was thinking how much courage it took for Jochebed to loosen her grip and let that boat just go off into God's hands.
Because it's a choice between me holding on to the basket. Or trusting that he's good enough to guide that basket with my child down a river and around the bend when I have no control, because I really don't. And that changed everything.
One of the amazing things that happened too, I have to add, is just a day or two later.
The next day,
our dear friend Peter Onguko from Kenya came to stay with us for a few days. And such a kind, godly, godly man. He sat down, Robin, there's Kenya next, Robin, how are you doing? And she started sharing some of the things we'd been struggling with, and he listened. He says, well, I'm thinking of Jochebed and how she had to let go of that basket. And here it was, like a third witness to this this lesson that God wanted to teach us, that we can trust him for our lives, we can trust him for our country, we can trust him for everything, but can we trust him for our kids? And yeah, we can.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes the hardest, but yeah, we can.
The alternative is just having a household full of anxiety and tension.
Well, you know, in Genesis 3, where it talks about Adam and Eve's sin, it uses the word pain in regards to Adam and getting his bread, and pain, he will bring forth bread from the earth. But with a woman, he mentions pain twice concerning childbirth. And it's made me think, and I've taught on this before, that I think every woman who gives birth twice. There's a physical birth, which is very painful, and you have to cut that physical umbilical cord because now this is a separate entity. This is a new soul, a new human. But I think later on in life, when that child starts crossing to adulthood, you go through a second set of birth pains, or even more painful, because now you have to let them go and just trust them completely to God, because now they're not under your authority and your control anymore. And that's a tough one. That's really a tough one. But I think every woman goes through those birth pains twice.
And I think the way that you can release your kids and be at peace is because you've learned to be at peace with him yourself. Your own faith is strong, and then you can release your kids.
Right.
Did you have a story to share as well?
Well, it's funny. I did think of a story that relates to so many of the things that you guys just talked about. When we left Kenya the second time, our boys were almost 11 and almost 9. And then we had a little girl, 3, and a newborn. And I was very nervous about raising my kids in America. I had fear and worry. And I knew what it would be like to raise them in Kenya, and I had peace about that. But coming here, I had been a rebellious teen, so I thought that's what teens do, and it's scary, very scary to me, just because of the influences. And I remember being so sad that we were leaving, and fearful also, and then realizing, you know, I know that we're doing God's will. It's hard to make this decision, but I know it's the right thing to do. I mean, we prayed about it a lot. We came back to help my mother-in-law's because of her health, and it wouldn't have been right to not do that. So it was God's will. So I kept thinking, I know this is what he wants us to do. We're going to obey. But early on, we were doing some kind of Bible study, and we were learning about Joseph and how in the end he said, you know, Satan meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. There was a reason. And I kept thinking, God has a reason and a plan, and I'm just going to have to trust that, and as hard as it was.
Same thing. It's not his sovereignty. Yeah. He either is who he says he is.
Right,
or
and I had to trust that.
Right.
And so, you know, here Caleb, our second son, he was 9, and he's kind of loves fun. So he was the one I was most concerned about, that he would be like, if it's fun, I'll do it. And so when he was 16, I'll never forget, he was scrambling eggs. We homeschooled, and that was his job that morning. He was making the eggs, standing there scrambling eggs, and he said, I love my life. And I was just like, you know, would he have loved it if we had been in Kenya? I don't know. But God brought us here, and we did what God wanted us to do, and God had given me peace ahead of time, not knowing.
Yeah.
But it was just so beautiful to hear him say that, because I was just like, oh, God is so good. He is so good, and he's so beautiful, and he cares for us, and also gives us that hope that our children are going to make some good decisions.
And then we can expect it of them, and they sense that.
Yeah.
It really is a powerful thing, how you think.
It really is.
I think maybe you said this while ago, or alluded to, that faith is caught.
Yeah.
I think our kids catch it from us. It is a contagious, it's contagion. And if we have it, they will catch it. Mm-hmm. If we don't have it, they don't have to catch it from someone else.
Yeah. So is fear.
And fear, that's right. That's the truth. And And so it is important that we have our own faith. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Husbands and wives have their faith, and of course we can encourage or discourage each other's faith. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you, I skipped this earlier, but I want to come back and ask you, how did you, what are some things that you did or recommend that be done to build Robin's faith, or for a man to build his wife's faith, encourage it?
Well, Robin spoke about how her attitude of just trusting me to be a good man inspires me to be that good man. I don't know if I succeed all the time, but I hope my track record is getting better.
It's great.
But for me, it's, again, gratitude. Mm-hmm. Every morning when I wake up, look over, and there's my wife, and I realize she chose me 42 years ago to marry me. But any day, if she wanted to, she could walk. She could just leave. She could just go. Mm-hmm. We're married and we have a marriage contract and a covenant, mm-hmm. but covenants get broken all the time. Mm-hmm. And when I realize this is a complete, full, mature human being who chooses to live with me for another 24 hours, and she doesn't have to, but she does, I'm just overwhelmed with gratitude. Mm-hmm. And it makes me so grateful that my wife, my best friend, wants to spend another day with me. Mm-hmm. And when you start the day with that, it's like you don't take each other for granted. Mm-hmm. I think too many people treat their spouse like a piece of furniture and they can't wait to trade it in for something new. Mm-hmm. Instead of looking at their spouse as the greatest treasure, mm-hmm. that becomes more beautiful and more precious with age. Mm-hmm. And so just having gratitude, mm-hmm. makes a huge difference.
And maintaining this, as I choose respect and he chooses appreciation, like I mentioned earlier, it's a spiral up. Because we either spiral up together or we will spiral down, mm-hmm. together, mm-hmm. as married couples. And I remember years ago I was working with a lady, her name was Julie, and she was whining about her husband, as most many women do, mm-hmm. when they're out and about, and complaining about him and how he was just so disappointing in every way. And I said, Julie, what would happen if you did an experiment and just for a day, one day, treat your husband as if he's the man you wished he was? Mm-hmm. She goes, but he's not. Mm-hmm. And I said, but what if you pretend? What if you treat him as if he is? Mm-hmm. And she said, I can't do that. And I said, that's a shame. Mm. Because it would make so much difference. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking the other day, wouldn't it be weird if you're at a wedding and the bride and groom is ready to make their vows, and when they're asked to tell the other that they love and cherish the other, and in sickness and health and so on, the husband looks at the wife and says, you're all right for now. She'll do, I guess. And the wife looked at the husband and says, well, I don't expect much, but unless something better comes along. I know he's probably going to let me down because he's kind of an idiot a lot of the times. Everybody in the church will go, oh, it would be so obviously inappropriate. Mm-hmm. Why does that become appropriate after you're married?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not. Mm-hmm. The same choice of expectation and devotion that you have at the beginning, you choose, mm-hmm. continually. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it gets better and better and better. It really does. Mm-hmm. And I know that we're flawed as humans, but you set yourself up for such success.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I have just a real quick example of a challenge to us as couples, everybody who's listening. A friend of mine's wife, Holly and Larry, are friends from Kenya. Mm-hmm. She had headache migraines for some years back when she was younger, and they were married and had young kids, and she had regular migraine headaches that were pretty debilitating.
Yeah.
In the bed, lights off, couldn't function. and felt just, you know, nauseated and everything. So really severe. And it went on for a long time, months, I guess, maybe a year or two. It was quite a long time. And, you know, of course, they used different medic. It was a couple of years. So they attempted, you know, different medicines and therapies and foods and, you know, allergy, all that kind of stuff. Just wasn't getting better. Mm-hmm. I wasn't getting consistently better. And so I remember Larry said, I remember what he did. I don't remember him telling me he was going to do it, but I found out this is what he did. Is he decided he was going to rescue his wife. And so he decided to pray and fast once a week until she was delivered of this. Mm. And I think maybe Mondays he would fast and pray for his wife. And I don't know how long he did that. He was faithful. It was a while. And then she was relieved of these migraines without inexplicably. She was relieved of her migraines. And I just would, the challenge, that for me is a great example in that way, but also what would happen if men and women were that tenacious and that determined to see that their spouse grew in the Lord?
Imagine.
Mm. Imagine what that would do for us. So if a man said, I will go in for my wife at that level, and that she would know the Lord.
Yes.
You know, the ultimate ways, and that the wife would do the same for her husband, whether they're believers or not, but they would go in for them at that level.
And believe in them enough to do that.
And do that, yes, right. And so maybe that's so a good challenge for some of us to think about. But thank you guys for sharing what
you've got with us.
We're out of time, so we'll go. But just to tell those who are listening that there are some resources we'll put in the comments or in the link below. So if you'll get down there and look at that, you'll find some other resources that will help you. In fact, we're putting together some practical things for you to do at home with each other or to consider doing so that you'll build faith in yourselves and in your spouse and your family. So may God bless us as He restores our homes.